The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia Online. I'm Andy Cahan, Director of Author Events, and I'm excited to welcome our guests this evening. Brontes Purnell contains multitudes. He is the author of Since I Laid My Burden Down, a debut novel about growing up gay in 1980s Alabama, that a writer in the San Francisco Chronicle says not only holds its own as queer literature, but also expands upon it. The winner of the 2018 Whiting Award for Fiction, Purnell is also the creator of the cult zine Fag School, the frontman for the Oakland punk band The Young Lovers, and the director of a number of short films, documentaries, and music videos. One of Vulture's 46 books we can't wait to read in 2021, 100 Boyfriends is a funny, foul-mouthed, and sensitive look into the messy lives of queer men navigating the pitfalls of modern dating. Tonight, he'll be in conversation with Caitlin Greenidge, also the winner of a Whiting Award, and the author of the much lionized We Love You, Charlie Freeman, a finalist for the Center for Fiction's first novel prize and one of the New York Times critics' top books of 2016. Look for her new novel, Liberty, coming this March. She'll be back here for it on May 17th. Brontes, Caitlin, great to have you here. The screen is all yours.
Thank you. Hi, Brontes.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm okay. How are you?
Hanging out, you know, it's a good day. It's very warm here.
It's very warm. Oh, we got good weather here too. So I'm just gonna like lob some questions at you and then we can open up to Q&A in about like maybe 30 minutes or so, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Let's just do it that way, I guess, unless you have any objections or you wanna do anything. Okay, good.
Oh, wait, should I read something? Yeah.
Oh, yes, please do.
Okay, wait. Amal, let me figure this out. I should have done this before, but I feel like once I find it, it's going to be magical. Okay, here we go. So from 100 Boyfriends, I'm going to read boyfriend number 19, the white boy with dreadlocks.
Okay.
There are periods of my life that roll through me hazily, not like an apparition, more like that moment a cartoon villain gets hit in the head with, say, an anvil or whatever, and all he sees is stars. My life was all flashbacks that never materialized. I woke up to a spider crawling on the floor, and I was reminded of this white boy I dated a while ago with these long-ass dreadlocks. I remembered that every time he was on top of me, his dreads would graze my face, and it felt like a nest of spiders crawling over me. I was too young to understand how this feeling would stay me permanently. We met at a liberal arts college in the Midwest. It was freshman year, and we mutually didn't know we were gay until we were drunk and had each other's dicks in our mouths at the student union one night at 2 a.m. By junior year, his dreads were in full bloom, and I didn't think to tell him that he should cut him, because I am nothing if not willfully non-judgmental, or that I was certain that Ja hated him. It was the 90s, and these Converse weren't nearly as prevalent. Either way, later that year, I dropped out of school to follow him whilst he was following Fish and Burning Spear, respectfully, on tour. We ate up his trust fund on organic orange juice, gas for the Jeep, and acid. During that period, I had fucked under a blanket of stars in the Grand Canyon some 9 or 10 times, swam in secret watering holes in the Appalachians, and saw longer stretches of highway between California and North Carolina than I ever knew existed. It would not last. A year and a half later, I was sitting around a fire in a drum circle in Colorado. I was washed out on acid and very drunk. At the apex of my trip, I felt the hand of the ancestors tap me on the shoulder and say, "Girl, take your black ass back to college. You don't even like these people. He just fucks good." I snapped to my senses and woke up the next morning and showered for the first time in 6 months. cut my hair, and took a Greyhound back to school to re-enroll. At the bus station, I tried to convince the dreadlocked white dude to come back to school with me and that we should probably switch our majors to like business or computer science. I saw the look of judgment in his eyes and I knew immediately that he was gonna say some busted shit, and I was right. I can't follow you back to Babylon, he explained, like completely fucking serious. It's like Jerry said, man, short time to be here and a long time to be gone. He broke down crying and hugged me. I went back to school and we stayed in touch for a while. And by 2002, he finally cut those fucking things. I think he's a librarian now or something. He even apologized for the whole dreadlock fish period eventually. And every once in a while, I look him up and torture him with a joke. Question, where do hippies fuck and how is it? Answer, intense, man, intense.
Thank you, that was perfect. I'm a huge fan of this novel. I love this novel. When I saw that it was coming out and that, you know, it was imminent to come, I think I harassed your editor to get a galley as soon as it was available, just because I love your writing and your voice. So I'm just going to go through the questions that I have around here. Let me bring up my questions. From that passage, I think I can ask you a little bit about, well, let's start with this one. This is like really obvious question, which is like writing about sex and how you get sex on the page and whether writing about sex in a novel is different than writing about sex or desire in a song, since you are, you know, you work across many genres and many different art forms versus, you know, writing it on a page for a reader to sort of come into. If you can sort of talk about that part of your artistic process and writing about sex in general.
Yeah, I think just like writing songs, it's like I play punk music and everything just kind of has to hit, you know what I mean? Like, and so I just like music because I get to really be a cheesy poet, which I love cheesy fucking poetry. And a song, you can do that. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just like, people will let you get away with that shit. You just have to hit the main bullet points. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you're explaining a dream that you had to someone and dreams are so fucking six dimensional that you just give the most through line or the most cohesive narrative of what was going on despite, you know, all that other clutter. See, that's when I write a song. But when I write a book, it's like you really have to like kind of flesh out that world. And so especially with 100 Boyfriends, it's like, I don't know, I can write about sex, but the thing about sex is like sex in literature never represents just sex. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, it's not a cruising utopia. Like some of these people are using sex as a metaphor for anxiousness, failure, boredom, like intensity. Like sex means like kind of like a zodiac of feelings. So it's like, you don't know what the sex is doing until you sit down and read the story. It almost becomes like the sex becomes another boyfriend in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so how you are treating it, I don't know. It's like, I think it's how it happens across, you know, any type of number of bodies you have sex with. So I think it's, I don't know, it's very unique or specific why I'm using it or how I'm using it or when it pops up or why it pops up. So.
I love that. I love the idea of a zodiac of feelings. That's such a great way to sort of describe how it's working in this book. And it's one of the things that I really admire about this book is like, you know, I've read in your interviews that one of the reasons why you sort of wanted to use this like through line of 100 Boyfriends is to sort of like talk about, I think you had a quote where you said like, I wanted to talk about how when you date somebody, you're dating like 100 ghosts, like they're sort of like haunted by these other experiences, like these relationships end up making up so much of a person's like general understanding of the world and like trying to capture that. And so I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that setup, how you came to that setup for this particular project that you wanted to work on, what was sort of like, if that was sort of always your intention or if there was sort of like you started writing and then halfway through sort of realized that's how you wanted to organize sort of the overall thing. And then I wanted also to talk about that idea of haunting, because I think that's something that's in your work across genres. At least I feel it. I don't know if you feel that too, but that seems to be in your work across genres. And I want you to talk a little bit about the concept of haunting too.
Well, okay, so it's funny that you even say that, because I have this book I used to read, like growing up, 13 Alabama Ghost.
Okay, and Jeffrey.
Well, Jeffrey is like this ghost that haunted the main photographer lady for years, but it's always, this was like such a spirit. I like read this all through, like from like probably third or fourth grade on, this was in a copy of like all the Alabama public libraries. And so I've always been obsessed with the idea of ghost and, you know,
of the
haunts and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like, but then also like, I think in my 20s, I did that game where it's like you're supposed to sit down and make a tree of everyone you've hooked up with, and then everyone that you your friends have hooked up with, and see where all the interconnectivity happens. I did this sometime in my 20s and got really grossed out, where I was just like, we really all are like fucking each other, like the fuck, you know?
Yeah. I mean?
But then also it is that that idea of just like, I don't know, that Freudian idea of just like, am I really just like the sum total of all the fucking mistakes my parents made? Someone didn't love me along the way or something, or I didn't get the right bottle on April 2nd, 1984. So now I feel like I should scream at my boyfriend. Like, what were these dials of experience in love that were happening and we're not getting, that kind of leads to these other sets of criteria, you know what I mean? And I think, I do think that we all, essentially, like when we date people, we're all trying to get back at some type of comfort or feeling that we were reminded of somewhere else. So I was like, how do these things work out? And if I think of all of the people we date as sort of appendages making up a larger body, what does that larger body look like? You know, and like, how is it functioning, or like not, but how is it not functioning? Like,
yeah, I love that. And it occurs to me too that you know, as you were sort of talking about like that exercise of like making your, like your hookup tree or whatever, it's a really smart way to map a community. What can be like a really amorphous thing, like figuring out how this community of people intersect and interact with each other. Because I'm so struck that this novel is describing like a really specific, obviously, like community and scene. I think it's a scene that like can get really easily lost to nostalgia. Like I think it's a scene that people can sort of romanticize a little bit, and the hookups for me like grounded this in this character's actual reality, while seeing sort of like how this scene and community builds and unmakes each other and sort of like goes through. I don't know, this is me as like, you know, a straight lady kind of like reading in, like I feel like, especially for, I think, straight women readers, there can be like a real romanticizing of queer community and being like, you know, we're over here stuck with straight men, and like, wouldn't it be so wonderful to like be over here? And I what I liked about your book was that it was a portrait of a community that always felt really grounded in this character's like really funny point of view, if that makes sense. And so I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about building that community within your novel, the setting of the novel and how important the setting is to your story, and sort of how you went about capturing that on the page.
Well, I think all straight women really love like most of my writing, because basically what I get to at the bottom of it is like, men ain't shit. And who talks it better than a straight woman, you know what I mean? So it's like, we can all hold hands and, you know, just blame the patriarchy on this one. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't think you necessarily need to be a hoish gay man to be like, oh, I know this nigga ain't shit. Like, know exactly what's gonna happen. You know what I mean? Like,
right, exactly.
But also like, yeah, like I definitely, sometimes I do feel like when I came to the Bay Area when I was like 19, 20, I essentially joined this cult of non-monogamy. where it was just like of course you like hooked up with your friends, or like that's how you made friends, or like everyone had this kind of like this free love synopsis, you know. But I think all human scenarios are just, there's plenty of pitfalls. Just like, I don't know, like, gosh, like even when I think of like, say like my dad or stepdad, you know, like even, you know, in their most promiscuous days as young men in the 70s, the most they probably ever slept with was like 50 women, right? Mm-hmm. And this is like by straight male standards that you are the stud of all studs, right, if you hit that number. Whereas like by the time I'm 24 and 25, I easily had triple or quadrupled that number. And like, right, but like, what does, you know, but what does that mean when it like, I don't know, when sex is also like, it holds all these kind of caveats, and you want this acknowledgement from this person, or like you don't want so much like attention from this person, but it still holds all these metaphors, even though it can be seemingly as transactional as a handshake, you know? Mm-hmm. I think kind of mapping that kind of source, you know? And at the end of it, even within all of this seeming promiscuity, like it's still like, there is like the themes of like friendship, acknowledgement, yeah, like self-esteem, all this shit like that goes in it. Like it's never, I don't think it's ever quite as free as like a lot of people who participated in that scene wanted it to be, you know? But I still think it was like, it's beautiful that we attempted it. Like, <that's> so I leave it at about that.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what it means or how it affects your work to move to work with sort of like a larger publishing house, because you're a prolific artist. You of course put stuff out on your own. You have, you know, you do collaborations. You are part of an art making world for you know, most of your artistic career. And this book is with FSG, with a larger publishing house. And so I'm wondering if you can talk about making art in under these sort of like slightly new conditions, what changes, what feels the same, what you sort of gain and what you feel like you may lose when you're making art under this new, slightly different lens.
It was said to me right before this book published, where they were like, well, Brontes, FSG has never put a book out like this before. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid to ask what they meant by that. Like, so I just didn't say shit. But I don't know. I think it just was like a new adventure. And it's like, this is probably the most produced piece of art I've ever put out into the world. Like 25 years of like making zines and bands and whatever. Like this was the most, even then, like Jackson, the editor, I don't think that he like, he did not edit this with a super heavy hand, because I mean there's so much colloquial meaning and so much slang and, you know, jazzy shit going on. Like I try to be a beatnik superhero. I don't think he wanted to like, you know, stifle it too much. But then I think after you've done the DIY thing so long, I feel like there comes a point where you're like, I've proved what all I needed to prove with that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really like when I don't know if I looked at it like, well, finally I have made it. I have arrived, blah, blah, yeah, blah. But it did feel good to like do something new, you yeah know, that didn't just kind of all, you know, kind of just like, it's hard. I was like, it's hard doing it by yourself all the time. And I was just like, it's so good to have this fucking handsome white man that's going to help. I'm like, boy, I'm gonna take all that privilege. Yeah, you go help with that. And so yeah, I'm cutting the fool. But no, it felt really good to just, it felt good to do something different, and it felt yeah good to have it look like that. I've definitely had a fun experience with it. Yeah. So
I'm so interested in the fact that you're both a writer and a dancer, because I think those two things can go together. But oftentimes I think sometimes writers sort of forget that they have bodies. And so it can be like a difficult thing. So can you talk about how dancing, being a dancer, being involved in dance informs your written practice and your written word?
Oh, well, I was a really bad dancer for about a decade and a half. Like, but also it's just like, really, it's like, it's, I don't know, it's like a language, you know? It's like how I like to go to things that I can't do and try to like put it together, because it's like, it really does, it kind of builds, it makes my writing smoother, or it builds my kind of IQ to have to explain, it builds my IQ to have to explain something that I've never really done before, and like explain it to myself. Mm. Like when you be in ballet class and they're just like, oh, press toes to push up to releve. And it, like, you literally sit there for 5 years being like, what the fuck are they talking about? But literally it just means like press your toe, like when you, there's a muscle movement that happens with your toes that just make it easier to go up. And one day when it clicks in your body, or you feel like you like finally get like more access to this language, it kind of just like locks in all these kind of like these incremental systems, you know? And so I love that. And also it's been hard writing in quarantine, because what I learned is that like, it's a mind body system that happens. All of my best ideas for writing, I realize, have always been in motion. It's like when I'm walking to the train, when I'm at my dishwashing job doing this repetitive task, where I can, you know, those points where I can go on autopilot and, you know, dream, you know, standing. So it's kind of been different when you don't really have that. So, I think it changes like the timbre of like the writing. But I'm also obsessed with this exercise too, of being in this kind of stillness and approaching it this way too, because, you know, I don't know, we never get a chance to repeat things. So like we should. So I don't know. I kind of like take the experience of like, what does writing in a manic stillness feel like? So.
Oh, that's exactly what quarantine is. It's manic stillness, right? That's what it is. Whew. It's so interesting, because like so much of my writing, you know, I lived in New York for 15 years up until the start of quarantine, essentially. And so much of my writing life, I didn't even realize, was done sort of in those in-between moments when you're just like you said, like you're just sort of like zoned out while you're doing these sort of other mundane tasks, like riding the subway or, you know, walking to work or doing all these other things. And it's been so strange to lose those spaces and times, and trying to figure out what that then can look like when it can feel like you're so like constrained in your space and your movement of where you can go. So yeah, exactly. We're coming up on the 8 o'clock point, and I want to give a chance for people to ask questions. And it looks like there's at least one question in the Q&A. So if other people also want to bring in questions, I'll read the first one here. How do you deal with writing about real people? Do you ever send people you've written about your writing before you publish it? And what are those conversations like? And if not, how do people respond to being written about?
Wait, what was the first part of that question again?
How do you deal with writing about real people, like people who you know?
I don't write about real people at all. Like, it's like, no, like for real, like people really, really, really want like it always to be like just straight to the bone memoir. And it's just like, I would never do that.
Why not?
I feel like it's not, there's something about it that's not interesting to me, or like not, you know, or not maybe like always like fair, or Like, you know, like I might write about like a situation, but like the characters involved, like they might switch voices, or like it's always essentially autofiction, you know. Mm-hmm. And plus also just like, I don't know, like being in the complication of, you know, just, I don't know, like it's funny, like you say you grew up in a house with like, you know, abusive crazy shit, and like one day everyone presents their perspective and it's like such varying like fucking stories to the point where it's like everyone's story is fiction at that point. Mm-hmm. Or you know, or is set to be fictionalized. So I feel like once I'm committing something to paper, I kind of feel like, okay, like this is like fiction, you know. And plus, yeah. I'm never really trying to, like, I don't know, like I'm never trying to punish someone or like out someone or do anything like that. I'm trying to paint the picture of like the larger conundrum of just human interaction in general, you know? Mm-hmm. So when that's your set of criteria, it's, it's just different. And so I wouldn't really, yeah, like people or situations might pop up in the very minute, but it's also one of those things where those people would not know it was them unless I told them. That's mm-hmm. always the way I write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are you reading and listening to right now?
Okay, so we were talking about this earlier. I've been listening to Cardi B Up, like on repeat. I think Up is better than WAP. I'm obsessed with the idea of like club bangers in quarantine. Mm-hmm. I have a book club because people were asking me about books that inspired 100 boyfriends. And it was actually one book it's Grace Paley, Later That Same Day.
Like, I love Grace Paley, yeah.
I had not read that book since I was 24, but it'd be weird because people are like, there's a couple, you know, when you get them weird critiques or whatever, where it's just like some like stuffy white person, and they're just like, well, I don't understand why this book is switching between first and third person. It feels just like a really detached style. I don't understand. And I'll be looking at this Grace Paley book that came out in the 70s, like, fucking fool's been switching between first and third since Kingdom motherfucking Come, but like, let me do it and I'm gonna be questioned, right? I'm a swindler. What, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know who my white literary mothers are. Y'all leave me alone. And so like, there's stuff like that. And then I'm reading Babies in Black. I read a lot of graphic novels. I like mm-hmm. graphic novels. And I heard that the new X-Men comic House of Yes is like superb. So I'm about to get a subscription and reinvest in my X-Men comic days, because that's where I really learned about morality.
Lovely. Great. Learning about morality from the X-Men. What did they teach you about morality?
Well, have you ever just sat there? I think there was this one comic, right, where it's like Kitty Pryde is like having a fight with a non-mutant black guy. And like, remember, it's like this, it was from 1986 or something. I used to buy vintage X-Men on the bus from this one girl. And there was just like this one panel where he's like, well, are you a mutant? But mutant is meant in the derogatory term. And she goes, well, I don't know, are you a nigger? And I was like, damn, the X-Men are really pushing this whole like fucking, you know, like it's like mutinous.
Wow, okay.
But it was always, but like it's always really larger like things than that, you know. Or it'll be like that my favorite one was this one where like Storm loses her powers, right? Because this other mutant, she's locked in the house with this mutant named Forge, and his like thing is like he has the superpower of the mind, he can build anything. But he was a government operative, and he made a gun that if shot at mutants could take their power away. Mm-hmm. And he claims to love Storm, but fails to tell her that he's the one that made the gun that shot her, that made her essentially powerless. And they're just having this crazy, insane back and forth battle about powers and accountability, and I'm reading this shit in like third and fourth grade, just like having this like kind of crazy Like, yeah. they're intensely moral tales. They're kind of like these soap operas in the page, but it, like, touches on so many, like, larger, like, subjects. I always thought the X-Men was a very interesting thing to read about, just, I don't know. But, like, you know, human interaction and just, like, how people, like, I don't know, are fucked up, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Where are we? As a multidisciplinary artist, how do you approach the idea of plot in your work? Do you plan in advance or as you go along or some other method?
I feel like the plot happens upon me. And also, like, I think just like when, especially like in a performance art sense or like in theater, like, I don't know, to keep the creative pitch high, you really have to be like, you know, you have to be, you kind of have to always be on your toes or how situations are happening. Cause, you know, I choreograph like in my like garage sometimes or like in my living room. I set up the plot points. But once you get to the theater, it might look like something totally different. Mm-hmm. So you're always constantly having to make these like kind of changes and adjustments and, you know, even when I have the most set plot in my head, like, I don't know, it can change or I can surprise myself constantly. Mm-hmm. I prefer an improv, you know, but then also within theater, we're taught that an improv is still something you have to practice. It's like improv actually means a kind of set intuition and performative IQ.
That's interesting. I like that. Let's see. My question is, how has living in the Bay impacted your work? How has Alabama impacted how you first started writing compared to now?
I don't know. They can be such disparate, like, of course, like, experiences or whatever. It's a trip dealing with, like, been, like, in this, like, kind of white neoliberal, like, bubble this goddamn long, you know, where it's like I coming here, I like was like, oh, I want to be free, I want to be punk, I want to be whatever, but then I don't know, you sit here and you just watch waves of money come in and out. Mm-hmm. You know, less than 10% of the population is Black, 98% of the homeless population is Black. You watch these structures of just like the AIDS epidemic and the crack epidemic, like, really just be like, it's like heavy, it's some heavy shit. But then I go back home to Alabama and like there's a healthy Black middle class, there's a bunch of conservative bullshit, but it's just like my folks, it ain't quite like here. So I feel like anybody like in America or any person that has like this colonial soul of me dealing with like kind of like these both sides of myself, and within these both sides are all these kind of warring fractions that happen. But also at the end of the day too, it's like, I don't know, like the Bay is my home. It's, I've really like made it like my home. And I think the art I made and how I made it couldn't have happened anywhere else. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, plenty of Black artists. I meet other artists like all the time. Like I just, no one particularly had that life I had where I was just like, oh yeah, I just moved here with $60 and I moved into this warehouse with 20 other kids and just like made like art. And you know what I'm saying? Like when you could really do that. So yeah, like for the most part, I say like Oakland is home. Mm-hmm. Oakland is definitely home. Mm-hmm. Alabama does not feel as non-home as it used to as I get deeper and more, it's become deeper and more assured of myself too. I don't hate going back home to Alabama either, because another side of myself is revealed to me. Yeah, it's become pleasurable.
Yeah. I really love your first book and its candor about religion, and I really love this new book and your candor about sexuality. And I've given it to several people. Are you interested in sexuality and spirituality? I think like being in conversation with each other.
Yes, totally. You know, I'm always like, I'm interested in like how we treat these things like very sacredly, but also the more secular points of these things. Like I think religion. I think the work deals with the fact that religion and sexuality and all these things we hold close can be dealt with in a very superficial way by people too, you know? So mm-hmm. it's always like kind of like this, like I'm exploring like both sides of just like the truly gut-wrenching heavy part, the kind of superfluous artificial part. Like, I think these things are definitely like always kind of in conversation with each other.
Yeah. Let's see. Can you talk about your film work in relationship with your writings, how those two fit together?
Oh, like, you know, originally I started this film series called 100 Boyfriends Mixtape, like probably like about a year before I started writing 100 Boyfriends. And so I just always liked the idea of like kind of like a video zine or whatever. Mm-hmm. That kind of like, I don't know, kind of can deal with like, you know, those like, I don't know, those like hicks, those hiccups and those beeps that happen in relationship, and how you can like, I don't know, zero in on them and just think about like how they look. My film work is very varied. It goes across many different kind of mediums, but then also, I don't know, I feel like in this day and age where you're really not allowed to not be multidisciplinary, you never know what the fuck you got to do to get the work done. Like I do think by coincidence of being performer, had a film career or whatever the hell you want to call it. And so sometimes I think there's a lot of rhyme and reason to it. Sometimes I just think I did it because I had to.
Oh, this is a funny one. I think this is from your editor. You always post hilarious stuff about white gays on your Instagram and it gives me life. Why do you love tormenting them so?
I'm not letting my motherfucking foot off their neck because they don't let theirs off mine. Like, plus I am so sure that the white boys I make fun of are just sitting at home just like, oh, why doesn't protest like us? Like, there's no way.
I love that answer. That's great. Hi from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I can't wait to read this book. My question is, how did working with your editor bring out something new to your work or affect the characters you created?
I think it was just like, he was the first person that ever just really just asked some very simple questions, not very evasive, not like intense, but he was just like, well, why exactly is this character doing this? Or I think a lot of it too was just like simple word count with him too, which is also a great exercise. He was like, well, this story kind of stops here, like what else is going on or what else could be happening. I think he was always kind of about asking me about kind of just whatever mental spaces, what else could happen in it, or what other orbits and gravities were happening within the story and how I felt mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. There was never a time when he was just like, well, I need this story to conclude like this, or I need this to, so, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just like a simple logical question that, you know, could become an appendage.
I love that answer. If you experience writer's block, do you have advice on getting back into the creative flow?
No, sit your ass down. Have a rest. Like, you probably write too much. Like, sit down with that other shit you done wrote and really look at it. Like, it's fine. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, plus I have the opposite. Like, I have like writer's vomit where I'm just like, I am never at a loss for words. And it like, that can be a problem too. Like, and so sometimes too, if you're like having writer's block, it probably just means that you need to like refill the well. Like, mm-hmm. like I think just the simple solution, if you're having writer's block, sit your ass down and read a book.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Excellent advice. This is a special request, like DJ special request. Would you please read Boyfriend Number 666, The Satanist? It's on page 40. I'd love to hear it in your voice. Thank you! 3 exclamation marks.
Do we have time?
It's 8:11, so I think we do have time to read.
Okay, hold on. Yeah, I'll do it. Of course. Okay, boyfriend 666, the Satanist. I had out-trolled myself once again. I wanted trench coat mafia dick, so I started putting out dating ads looking for adult players of Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons. I was curious to see what would come from the net I had cast, and the answer would be standing in front of me sooner rather than later. I got a late night text from a gentleman caller who said that he was a 9th level warlock and that he could teach me both the fantasy games and blow my back out. I got to his house and was literally so not prepared like I thought I was, but that fool was on his 9th level warlock swag so hard. Before me stood a grown ass man with surgically implanted fangs, a cape, red contact lenses, and an inverted pentagram tattoo on his forehead. The tattoo distracted from his gentle features. He really was a pretty guy, though he fucked in this ugly way. He asked me about my own inverted pentagram tattoo, and I was like, oh, well, really, I'm a romantic Satanist. I believe in Satan as an allegory and as a literary vehicle, and really his being the story of anarchy and patriarchal defiance. Silence, poser, he said, and advanced on me. Before I could realize that I had not fully consented to it, I was naked with a belt around my neck and being choked to the gods. He made me repeat, fuck God, hail Satan, over and over again. He was also like, you are just a faggot hole for Satan's sons, to which I rolled my eyes. If this was Satan's best sex warrior, it stood to reason why Satanism in general was such a PR nightmare. His stroke game was at 58%, and considering how much plot was involved, I still felt like instead of fucking him, I should have just like eaten a cheeseburger or goofed around on the internet. He had a box of condoms with inverted pentagram insignia on them because apparently Satanists have their own brand of condoms. Condoms, by nature, seemed like such a lawful thing. Why would a thrall of the Dark Lord even bother? But I said nothing and let him fuck me despite my mild latex allergy. He came in like 3 minutes and then showed me how to play Magic the Gathering as promised. And though I never fucked him again, I still, to this day, meet him every other Wednesday to play the game.
Excellent choice for whoever had that special request. That was fantastic. I think we have maybe like three extra, maybe this one really quick. Can you share your book club information? How can someone find your book club that you mentioned that has the books that influenced this book?
The book club. No, wait, I'm doing a book club podcast for someone. I myself don't have a book club because you don't want to come to my book club.
I was going to say, where is this book club? But okay.
Like, you will be on your own. I will, every Tuesday, I'll be like, hey, you guys, I have to cancel. Listen, I'm just like, I'm high. me running a book club, that's a recipe for failure.
Okay, can you say the podcast that you may be on talking about these books? Because I think people want to know the...
Let me look at it real quick. Da. It's, that's for this event. Wait, everybody just email me and I'll tell you.
Okay, email you or Google you and podcast and you should come up, right? Like, we should be able to find you pretty easily.
Yeah, or like just hit me up on Instagram and I'll try to fucking, because I'm like, it's something. And I'm like, you know how it is, trying to find things.
Yeah. So contact Brontes either on Instagram or via email and he will get that information to you about where he'll be discussing those books. Oh, final question. How do you feel about print books versus ebooks? Do you have a preference that you like to read from?
I am a hoarder. I feel not safe unless there's lots of shit like just crowding around me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could literally sit in a fucking trash heap and just be like the happiest fucking person in the world. Give me books. Like, I got books from 20 years ago where I'm just like, if all else fails, the house is burning, I'm grabbing the books. I don't care if I hurt myself. So yeah, I did have a stated enough how I feel about books. But if you want to do an ebook, that's fine.
All right. I think that's it. I think we've come to the end. Thank you so much. This was wonderful. Just had a really great time talking to you tonight. The novel's fantastic. You know, I obviously we're all fans here, but it's really just wonderful to see it out in the world and to get to read it and talk about it and to see the work that you're doing around it. So thank you for writing it. Thanks for bringing it out into the world.
Y'all call me.
All right.
It's nice to see you, honey. Bye.
Nice to see you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.